Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy, Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome back, or welcome for the first time, my apologies, Milwaukee Milkman right-hander Kyle Mora. Kyle, thanks for joining us this week.
Yep, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, Kyle, you guys have been doing so good this year that Kevin and I have had to have on quite a few Milkman players and stuff. That must be good news that you guys are playing so well.
Yeah, we're playing pretty good baseball. The first half went pretty well. We had a little skid there in the beginning that I think a lot of teams would be happy if that was considered a skid for them. So we've played pretty well, and we're just trying to keep the second half going the same way we were in the first half.
Well, let's talk about name today as Pitcher of the Week by both us here this week in the Association and by the American Association. Fantastic performance by you last week. Talk to us a little bit about that outing and how you felt going into that contest.
I felt good. It was actually funny. I was able to go home for a few days in California and see my wife and hang out at our apartment for a little bit in San Diego. So it was a little different just getting prepared for the week as far as playing catch. I had to find a couple people from home. Thankfully, I did. I have a couple old college roommates that live down there that I was able to play catch with. So nothing got thrown off. And then, yeah, going into the outing, I felt good. I figured I was going to feel good. We had an extra couple days because of the All-Star break in between starts. So I knew I was going to be able to go pretty deep in pitch count. And then everything just kind of was working early. Me and Cam Blago were on a pretty good page. We didn't worry too much about specific hitters with them. We just attacked with what we know kind of works for me. That's kind of the good thing about having a guy that's caught you a lot of times throughout the year. Him and Roy have both caught me a lot. So we just went with the stuff that works for me, and everything was kind of on. My two-seam was a big pitch that night, my sinker, and they beat a lot of ground balls into the turf, and we played really good defense. So, I mean, when you have a shutout with only four strikeouts, it speaks a lot for the defense that was playing behind you and the pitch calling going on. There wasn't many shakes. So, yeah, it was a cool night. It was fun. But it was definitely more than just the stuff I was doing. It was a lot going on behind me.
Now, you go one over the minimum in that game. I mean, that's pretty impressive that, you know, they had two hits, I believe, a walk and a hit by pitch in that contest, and you eliminated three of those guys with double play grounders. I mean, you must have really been were you feeling like that you were in kind of a groove as that game was going along?
Yeah, I definitely felt like I was in a good rhythm. Me and a couple of the starters talk all the time about how important the first hitter of every inning is. That's been a thing that has been nailed home for me since college. And so just bringing it here into pro ball and all along my career, that first out's important. So even the couple times where a guy got on, I think the hit by pitch was the first hitter of an inning. I know for sure the walk that I had was the first hitter of an inning. Being able to erase them pretty quickly was super, super important to keep the pitch count down and be able to go deep into the game.
Now, I'm interested about your thought. Everybody in the starting rotation made the All-Star team, except for you. Did that bother you at all?
Depends the way you look at it. It bothered me from a personal standpoint because I know what to expect from myself, and I know that the start of the year for me wasn't what I'm used to and what I expected. I was super, super, super stoked for the four guys that did make it from the starting staff. We obviously had Peyton Gray as a reliever that made it as well. There was no bitterness to it. There's no negative thoughts towards it. I was really happy for all four of them. All four of them were more than deserving. From that point of view, no. From the other point of view, personally, that my performance stuff, yeah, a little bit, but it's nothing that I need to, you know, get caught up in. That's not what is super important to me. It's just putting in a good year, and I know that if I keep throwing the way that my last few starts have been, then I know where I'll be where I want to be at the end of the year anyways. So I honestly think there's just been a few clunker starts for me. It hasn't been like a season-long struggle or a first-half struggle. It's just been a couple bad ones here and there with a lot of good ones thrown in. So it's hard to keep pace with the guys in our starting staff. We have a really strong staff. We have four guys that obviously were in the All-Star game. We had the starter of the All-Star game. We have the top two ERAs in the league. So we got all this stuff going for us in the staff. So it's just trying to go out every fifth day and keep pace with everybody and keep throwing up zeros as much as we can.
And looking at your stats, in 67 innings, you have 44 strikeouts. So it's not a high strikeout total. But do you feel by not striking out so many batters that it helps keep you in ball games later, as opposed to, let's say you're striking out 10 guys in six innings, but then you're already at 100 pitches?
Right. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been a reliever my whole career in college, and then my first year here in Milwaukee, and last year with the Diamondbacks, I was a reliever. And so if you look at all those stats, my strikeout numbers are higher than my innings pitched in all those years. And so I kind of shifted game plans a little bit with it. Obviously, when you get to a two-strike count, you want to go get your punch-outs. But especially early on in games, the first couple of times to the order, when you're early in counts, it's letting guys get themselves out. If they want to take pitches and see pitches and get into a count, then we'll go for strikeouts after that, and we'll set them up, or we'll finish them based off of the way we set them up in the count with the pitches we've thrown. But going out early, again, like we talked about with that first hitter and the first couple guys of the inning, if we can get early outs with the first couple of pitches and then try to go get strikeouts later on in the game, then that's better for me, because I'd rather go deep in a game anyways than throw up a bunch of zeros than have a bunch of strikeouts. So
I'm noticing Milwaukee has been the only team that's given you a chance to start in your career. Was that the game plan going into this year, that you were going to come back on the condition you were going to be starting, or did it just happen out of necessity?
It kind of just happened by based off of what we needed. So it was an interesting start to the year for me. I was in spring training with the Diamondbacks and got released. And so coming here was a really late decision. I was only built up as a reliever for the Diamondbacks too. So I didn't have the build up and pitch count and stuff that most guys would coming into a season to start. And then once I talked to Anthony about coming back out here, he said he was looking for me to start, but we had, I think, five or six starters already coming into spring training. So if it was better for us as a team to have me in the pen, then that's what we're going to do. And when I came in spring training, I had a really good start. My bullpen before that, when we got here, was really strong. And so he felt it was better for our team to have me in the rotation, which I'm a fan of. I mean, I'm good with either. I'm cool with both. I've done both. I've had success doing both. And so wherever it kind of fits need for me is where I'm good with. I think that as far as pitch selection and what I have in my repertoire, I think it kind of fits more as a starter. And I think that's what's going to help me get to where I eventually want to get to in my career. But if the team needs is more for me to be in the bullpen, then that's not something I'm opposed to. So I'm just kind of here for what we need to do and ready to start when we got in for spring training.
Kyle, let me ask you. You start out the season with a couple of tough outings, like you talked about, then really seemed like you had turned the corner, then hit a little bit of a tough patch, but now look just dominating of late. What do you think is kind of turning the corner for you right now?
I think there was a certain point of the year where I was worried too much about what hitters were doing and what their strengths and weaknesses are, rather than just focusing on me and doing what I do. Whether that's certain pitches and certain counts, or trying to trick people or confuse hitters, rather than just throwing what I know is my best stuff in certain counts. When you're out there, you got to believe that your best stuff is better than their stuff. So, I think there was just a few starts where I was either overthinking hitters because I faced them once before, and I was trying to overthink the whole game plan thing, what they've seen, what they haven't seen, and what I can get them with. And now I'm throwing my fourth or fifth best pitch to them rather than throwing my best pitch or my second best pitch in a certain situation to guys. And so the last few outings have been strong ones. I've been able to go deeper in games and keep base runners down. I know that the runs and earned runs and stuff have been low the last few outings, but I know that's just because I haven't had a lot of traffic. So getting the leadoff guy out, getting the first couple guys out in each inning has helped me a lot, and then just sticking to what my stuff is and what my best pitches are rather than being too concerned about what the hitters are thinking.
Now, you were talking about the relationship and how you've really been able to work well with Cambalago and Roy Morales. You know, I think the relationship between a pitcher and catcher is more unique than any in sports, because the level of trust really has to be something special. So how do you build that trust with those two guys?
Honestly, it's just time. You know, when we came into camp, I think I threw all my bullpens to Cam because I threw my game to Roy. So it was kind of like this back and forth of trying to get to know all of them. And then at the same time, they got to learn the other four starters plus six or seven or eight guys in the bullpen. So there's a lot on their plate. And so just as time goes along, you get more and more comfortable. You get more and more confident with them. Going back to what we were talking about earlier with what the kind of struggles were, I think there was a lot of shaking off and the decisions and stuff between each other, and it wasn't pointing fingers at the catchers being wrong or me being wrong with pitch calling. It was just neither of us being 100% confident in what pitches we wanted to go with in certain counts, where if you look at it now, I think Cam's caught my last two or three outings, and I've probably only shaked a handful of times between all three of them. So as you just keep going along, obviously the time you spend on the bus and on the road and in the clubhouses and stuff, you keep building that. But I think specifically for pitch calling and the pitcher-catcher stuff and that side of it, you just get more comfortable as you get more innings with them. And so being at this point in the season and this many innings deep with both of them, there's a comfort level and there's a confidence in each of them that we're going to go in with a pretty good game plan and we're going to know what we want to do with certain guys, and our stuff's going to be hold up pretty well against anybody.
Now, one of the interesting things this season about Milwaukee has been the fact that it looks like Anthony Barone has made defense a key part of this team right now. And you guys are second in least amount of errors committed, second in fielding percentage. As a pitcher, you talked about, you know, really wanting to allow your guys to just make plays for you. It looks like they're doing a great job behind you, so you can have that kind of confidence.
Yes, definitely. Turf helps. I think even the position players would kind of give a little bit of credit to that. But definitely, I mean, our guys have played on turf, on dirt, on grass, on anything. We've shown it kind of all over the league. We've played in Fargo on their turf or on their grass, Winnipeg's grass, Gary's, all that stuff. We've played on all surfaces. And so our guys have shown up. They've put in the time for it. And so there's a confidence definitely. I think the middle of our infield is our anchor, with Brian and with Gabe up the middle, and Reggie in center. I think pretty much anything that goes up to the middle of the field is getting vacuumed up by either of those three. So everybody, even on the corner guys, obviously, but I think those three up the middle have been the huge anchor for all of it. There's a comfort level for sure. There's a confidence in it that you don't need to miss bats all the time to get outs. And so that's helped us a lot, especially the starters who are trying to go a little bit deeper in games than the relievers that get to lay it out for just an inning.
Kyle, one of the interesting things I think about this team is this starting staff is fairly young. I mean, you guys are younger guys, a lot of in the early 20s, and I'm wondering how you guys have been so successful when there's, you know, you would think a veteran staff would be dominating the way you guys are, but you guys are really just out there controlling the tempo and really dominating games. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts on how successful you guys have been.
I think it's interesting because it's young, but there's experience. I mean, personally, I came out of school in 21. I had a lot of years at college though, at a big school, UCLA. So I have a lot of innings under my belt, and then I've been here now for parts of 3 years and, with the Diamondbacks last year up to AA with some experience. And then you have Frankie Barto, who's been up to AA with the Nationals. Christian Young's been dominant in this league for a few years now. Zimmerman's been a staple in this league, and he's going to give you as many innings as anybody else in the league every single year. And then Vasquez has been, he'll show up and pitch anywhere at any time. And he's done it for multiple teams. He's done it in this league a few times. And So it is young. I definitely agree that it's young, but I think there's a lot of experience even within the young guys. And I think honestly the biggest thing of it is there's a competitiveness to all of us. So when you have a starter every night going out and at least giving you five, giving you six innings, and keeping our team in a game every time, it gives you a little motivation the next day to try to go up and one up it, or to kind of pull your weight within the rotation. Because if you have a starter too where you slip up or you don't go deep in a game, it's kind of glaring at that point because of how well everyone else is throwing. So I think the experience of it helps, just being young, but the success of everybody and everybody pulling in the same direction on the starting staff definitely helps all that.
What's the relationship for you guys in the dugout? Are you talking about when it's not your start? Are you talking with the starters about how you might attack a guy or sharing your thoughts on a particular hitter?
I think with certain guys. I think with the guys in the middle of the lineup or the top of the lineup that are dangerous and can do some damage, we're pretty loose, though. We're a pretty loose bunch. We're not playing many games in the dugout, but we're talking a lot. We're talking about different things. We're talking about what's going on in the game. We're talking about all sorts of things. Specifically with hitters, it's more maybe after the fact with certain guys. We faced Winnipeg, so we saw Murphy and he got us a few times, and so it's just like certain guys like that you talk about in the middle of lineups that can do some damage if maybe there's some indecisions about how to attack certain guys like that, you might go to somebody. But the pitchers mainly stay together. We're in the dugout most of the game, and then the relievers kind of go down as they need to because that's the luxury of our setup at our field at Franklin, is we have the bullpen connected to our dugout super close, so it's not like there's a disconnect between the pen and the starters. So we kind of all get to hang out together in the dugout and we have a good time, but there's kind of like going back to what I've said a few times, just the confidence in your own stuff. So we definitely share thoughts within the game about certain hitters that can do damage within a lineup, but a lot of it relates to what we kind of do well specifically with guys.
How do you like that setup at Franklin with the bullpen right next to the dugout? Do you feel like you can't get away with as much as you can with other dugouts where you're buried way out in the outfield?
Not necessarily. I think it's kind of nice, honestly, just being close. I know definitely I'm a fan of it for my pregame warm-up, being able to throw and just walk 10 feet and be in our dugout. I don't need to be walking all the way down from one end of the field to the other to get to the dugout in between and stuff. But so it makes that part of it easier. I liked it when I was in the bullpen here because you could go from standing in the dugout to being on the mound within 15 seconds just because it's right there. I'm a fan of it. Our clubhouse is deep out in center field, so being a starter sometimes if you want to go up and grab something to eat or use the restroom or something, you got to haul out to center, but obviously there's not many complaints there. We got a good setup where we're at for sure.
And looking at the league standings right now, you guys are got a comfortable lead on Cleburne, six games up. And even though Kansas City, among people in the league, get looked at as a club with all the big league vets and they seem to be the standard bearer for the league. Do you guys find it yourselves looking at, hey, how's Kansas City doing? Where are we with them as far as top record in the league? Is there any of that going on?
Not personally. There might be some guys that check standings and check all that stuff, but I honestly couldn't even tell you who the top four were in our division specifically. I don't think we're focused on that big time right now. We know if we go out and we play the way that we do and we play the way that we have been, that we're going to be where we want to at the end of the regular season. And then once we get to that point in the postseason, anything really happens. So we know that we're at the top. I can tell you that. I know we're at the top of our East division, but aside from that, we're not checking a ton. We're not following certain people or worried about certain records or, certain goals for wins or all this stuff. We're just trying to go out every day and keep it the same. And pro seasons are a long season, so you can't get too caught up in week to week. You just got to take it day by day and let it kind of play out the way it's going to play out at the end of the year.
I have to tell you, Kyle, I didn't want to mention this to you earlier because I was concerned you wouldn't want to talk to me any longer here, but I do feel, in the interest of full disclosure, of letting you know, my dad did graduate from UC Berkeley. So do you have anything bad to say about me or my dad for doing that?
No, I won't hold it against them. I'll let the records and the results play out for themselves and speak for themselves. I won't say anything too bad.
So greater loathing for USC or UC Berkeley?
Definitely SC. Definitely SC. We'll let Cal get it. If Cal gets one from us, that's all right, but SC can't happen.
You were talking about the success in playing, you know, big-time college baseball. You're playing some of the best guys in the country, best schools in the country in terms of baseball programs. Do you have some personal highlights from UCLA in your time playing there that really stand out to you?
I mean, our 2019 season was pretty special. That was my junior year. We didn't lose a weekend series all year. We didn't lose a midweek non-conference game all year. We were the number one seed going into the playoffs. We won our regional. We hosted a super regional. I think we had 13 draft picks, I think it was. We got guys that were first rounders. We got four, five or six big leaguers, I think, from that team alone. That year was cool. While we were in that year, we knew it. We knew it was something special. We didn't really want to waste it. That was our big motivation throughout the year. And so now that we're on the flip side of it, being able to look back, that was definitely the highlight of it. That year was a lot of fun. There wasn't a lot of losing going on. And when there was losses, there was a lot of wins following it. So that was a fun year for sure.
What did you graduate from? What was your degree at UCLA?
I graduated in 21 with a degree in political science and a minor in history. I was done with school in 20, but the whole pandemic thing happened, and I ended up taking a fifth year in 21, so I just had to add on a minor. So I'm minoring in history, and my major is political science.
You know, I have to tell you, in looking at your stats from college, when I was writing about you receiving the Pitcher of the Week honors, I was thinking, I mean, you went to like a super awesome school, had great statistics there. I mean, are Major League Baseball clubs just stupid that they didn't come out and draft you? I mean, I just don't understand that. Were you a little surprised by that?
Personally, yeah. I mean, my junior draft in 19 was a tough one, tough pill to swallow for me. I think it was something that I was not expecting at all to get passed on. And then in 20, I was having the best year of my career as a senior and was definitely probably on path to get drafted. And then the pandemic hits and shortens it up to 5 rounds. And then I go back in 21 and I was injured a little bit and didn't have as great of a year. And so my path was different. My path has been different. I definitely think that there's somewhere for me to play in affiliate baseball, and I've been trying to follow that and stick with it. And I can't really control the thoughts of other people. I'm just trying to do what I can do best and give people something to like so that they can give me another shot.
What were your experiences like with the Diamondbacks organization?
It was cool. It was fun. I think it was a little bit more short-lived than I would have expected. But I was moved in and out of the system, so I got to meet a lot of new people and play at a lot of different levels and play with a lot of different players. And I spent a good chunk of time in Double A last year, which was an awesome experience. Double A is filled with a bunch of future big leaguers that are just kind of trying to get their consistency ready for the big leagues. And so being around certain starters and certain relievers and certain guys, specifically with the D-backs, and then you're playing against guys all around that are future big leaguers, and right now there's a bunch that are already in the show. So it was a cool experience. It was fun. it was obviously my first time in affiliate, so it was a learning curve a little bit of how kind of the politics side of it works a little bit, but the analytics and all that stuff. But it was a cool experience. It was fun. I'm glad I got to at least do it once. I'm hoping it's not my last experience with an affiliate team, obviously, but I'm thankful for it, and I had a good time with it.
Well, Kyle, that's fantastic. Kevin and I greatly appreciate you joining us here tonight, but since you're a first-time guest, you get to learn that our guests get to give us a final thought before we let them go here tonight. So whatever you would like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Oh, man, that's tough. I don't know. I hope the Milkmen keep doing what we're doing, and hopefully we'll see you guys at the end of September and ending on a positive note. That's all I can really think of.
Fantastic. Kyle Mora, thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, Kevin, great having Kyle Mora on. Boy, he's having quite the season for the Milwaukee Milkmen.
Seems like the ball's been rolling for him as the season's gone on. He had a little bit of a rough patch in middle of June, but I mean, the last four starts have just been brilliant for him, topped with the complete game against Winnipeg.
You know, what's so impressive about this staff, Kevin, is that there's just nothing wrong with this Milwaukee team. I mean, this starting staff is spectacular. The bullpen looks great. Nate Hadley really is the only guy struggling right now. And, you know, you got to wonder if Peyton Gray winds up taking over that role as he did in 2020.
I believe Gray may have taken over that role. It just seems to me when they picked up Gray to be on the All-Star team and then Gray gets the ninth inning, that would right there would send me a little bit of a hint that maybe they're looking at Gray as the new ninth inning guy.
Yeah, but you can't really blame him. He finally gave up a run after 11 and two-thirds innings of being not scored upon, but the stats are just ridiculous for him. I mean, we got to see what I think is quite arguably the best relief performance by a guy in this league ever in 2020, and I guess he's trying to top it. I had 6 hits allowed in 20 innings and like 4 walks or something. The numbers are just crazy for him, Kevin, and it's really a pleasure to watch him pitch.
It is. You know, when he came back from the Royal system last year, the stats were good, but it seemed like in the playoffs it just wasn't there for him, and as evidenced by he had a 9.64 earned run average in the playoffs, and it just didn't seem Peyton Gray-like. But and we wondered, what were we going to see this year? But it's been smooth sailing for Gray.
One thing we love about this league, Kevin, is that guys figure it out, you know, and then put back together impressive stats. So, well, Kevin, let's talk this week about what's going on out there in the power rankings. Milwaukee number one this week, well deserved after this team is just spectacular, just really looking well rounded. But you can't really deny those Kansas City Monarchs, Kevin. This is a team that figures out a way to win. They're just getting solid performances throughout this team, and it's just another what we expect out of Kansas City, I guess, at this point.
Rough weekend for them in Cleburne as they only won 1 out of 3 games, but can't really let it take away from the body of work thus far this season.
You know, Kevin, if you look at this team, the one thing that really surprised me about them is Jalen Miller having a spectacular year for them in that starting role and has become the ace of this club without any exception or argument, I think, at this point. But there's not anybody after him that I just go, wow, this guy is just dominating or something. I mean, that's a pitching staff that's putting up pretty solid numbers. I believe 4th in the league in ERA, but and please excuse this term, but the kind of a no-name group, kind of a group that you look at and go, nobody's having a season that you go top 4 ERA or whatever. It's really a credit to how well-rounded this team is, I think.
I think everybody thought that Brandon Finnegan coming in was going to be a guy with the major league pedigree that was just going to come in and be lights out. And you know, he's been decent, 4-3, 3.68 ERA, but I think they expected he would be a guy that maybe would give up like only two runs a game. So, you know, it's not, like you said, it's not a standout pitching staff, but it's pretty solid when you look at it. Jordan Martinson, Zach Madsen's been good. And we got another guy here, Trey Jeans has been very good. But there's not that one guy with like a 2 ERA or a reliever with like a 1 ERA with a ton of saves. It's just been a decent ball club.
Third in the rankings this week, Kevin, is the Sioux City Explorers, who, oddly enough, won the first game of their series against Lincoln and then lost the last three, kind of reminiscent of last year's final weekend of the season when they were knocked out of the playoff chase. But still, 6 out, 32-31, a club that Solomon Bates pitched very well for them yesterday. Unfortunately, the team could not hold the lead, and they wound up losing the extra innings. It looks like if they could just avoid Lincoln, this Sioux City team would be pretty good.
Well, that's a problem, though. You can't avoid Lincoln, and that's been a bugaboo for the Sioux City team the entire season. And I was at two of the games over the weekend. And if Sioux City is going to make a run, they need to get production out of the middle of the field. I'm talking second base, Delvinson playing Miguel every day in 208.
Miguel Sierra?
Yeah, Miguel Sierra is only in 207 from the shortstop spot. And then Chase Harris, a relatively regular center fielder, is hitting 221. And they had a lot of trouble scoring runs against Lincoln and may cost them on Friday and Saturday night. And I just look at that. That's their weakness right now is the middle of the field. I know Steve Montgomery loves his team, loves the defense all three of those guys provide. But at the plate, it's just not happening right now. And it's one of the things that could be holding Sioux City back from contending for a division title.
You know, Kevin, you're bringing up great points, and it was something that we've talked about a couple of months ago, or 6 weeks ago, or something about. If you're a pitcher on this staff, you know you're not going to get six runs on a fairly consistent basis. I mean, it may happen once or twice in a week, but this is a team that's going to scrape out a lot of 3-2 games, 4-2 victories, kind of thing, as you talked about. So they lose 3-2 on Friday night. They lose 7-6 last night. They lost 7-6 to Lake Country last Friday. I mean, a team that just narrowly wins games or doesn't score enough to win games. And, you know, you talked about, Kevin, on the show about how that can be troublesome for a pitching staff. This is a veteran pitching staff with a lot of guys that really get how they need to pitch. So I wonder if you think that knowing you're not getting a huge amount of offense might hurt a performance of a Trenton Toblachar or Solomon Bates.
I don't think so. I think the pitchers are pretty focused on what they need to do when they go out to the mound, and they can't really worry about how much offensive support they're going to get. I think the pitching on this team's been fine, 4.46 ERA for the staff. But I think every night out, the Explorers know that they're going to have a chance to win because of the pitching, but it's the hitting that's got to have to step up and be a force every night.
Number four, Kevin, is the Lake Country Dockhounds. I think the story in the East so far this year. They have responded under manager Ken Huckabee and come away with another solid performance this weekend. And, you know, we don't talk about this group very much, Kevin, but this infield for Lake Country is as good as anyone you're going to find in this league. All four guys are hitting above 300. They're scoring runs. They're producing runs. Marcus Chu may be the most underrated player in this league, but you got Blake Taveri having a resurgence, kind of a renaissance for his career. Brian Ray has been fantastic to them. You're not going to get a lot of power, but you're going to get continual production. And they look like this is a group that really could ensure that this team has a serious opportunity to make a championship run.
You know, you could almost flip the story around from Sioux City to Lake Country, and Lake Country's got plenty of bats, but you just wonder who are going to be the guys that are going to get the outs, and if there's something that's going to stop Lake Country, it's going to be that. It just seems like the bullpen's good, but the starting pitching outside of Mike Schorn, who seems to be pretty steady about every time out, it's been tough to get consistent starting pitching out of this club. You know, you find a positive with Randall Delgado, who's pitched well as of late, but, you know, and Austin Voigt's thrown well, but, you know, Voigt, it's been a pretty small sample. He's only had four starts. So, that would be the thing to watch out for with Lake Country is the starting pitching at this point.
Now, we should say that the league chose Stephen Sensley as the player of the week after hitting three home runs in three games. Put some pretty solid out numbers. We're not disputing that in any way. But you and I talked last week about Curtis Terry joining this team, and him and Sensley have really added some power bats to this club. So if they're not going to get much improved pitching, Kevin, by the performance of this offense, and we've talked about this with other teams, I don't think we've really come and examined this from Lake Country, is this a team that can outscore clubs to win a championship?
I just never really see that formula work in the long run. In the long run, I think you've got to have starting pitching. You know, it gets later in the year, it just seems like it's harder for the bats to keep up, and I think you got to have the pitching if you're going to make a championship run.
Number five spot this week, Kevin, the Lincoln Salt Dogs, I should mention because I haven't really been talking about where the teams are on the standing, so I will right now. So Lincoln Salt Dogs move up to second now in the West Division, five games behind the Kansas City Monarchs. Only 5-5 in their last 10, but did take 3 out of 4 from Sioux City over the weekend. And it looked Matt Cronin and Stephon Moore pitched better over the weekend. Could the All-Star break have been what they needed to really get their seasons back on track?
Well, I think we're starting to get some answers in the bullpen. Devin Kahn has been very good for Lincoln since he's been picked up. 9 innings pitched. He's only allowed 5 hits. He's been put into high leverage situations and has come out looking really good. So I think Kahn is emerging as an answer in that pen. Could he be the closer at some point? Very possibly. Another guy I noticed, RJ Fuhr has been very good out of the bullpen too. You know, 44 strikeouts in 28 innings. He was in a higher leverage situation, and Carter Hope has become the closer of the ball club. You know, he has been in the league. A lot of us know him. You don't think of him as a guy with closer stuff. And the strikeouts totals aren't up there. But so far he's gotten the job done. But I can see where once Kahn settles in, Kahn could end up being the closer. So what that has done, it's given Matt Cronin and Stephon Moore a chance to try to get their selves righted. You know, how many times have we talked this year that, well, like you can't do it, they don't have a bullpen. Well, I think they've done a good job of addressing it. As far as the starting staff goes, I see three pretty decent guys, and then I see one really good guy with David Holmberg. So I think the pitching staff for the Salt Dogs, it's what they got right now. I think can contend for a title. The bats a little bit inconsistent, but you know Luke Roskin was on a really big hot streak. As the top batting average on the ball club right now. Connor Panis made a great showing at the home run derby. And Nick Anderson had a big home run yesterday, so maybe Anderson getting moved up to the top spot in the batting order maybe that's going to shake up Anderson, and Anderson's going to get going again. So don't sit on the Salt Dogs ball club. I know a lot of times we don't give them the attention they deserve, but I think they got something going.
You know, Kevin, let's stick with this club here for a minute, too, because a lot of people got caught on the Luke Roskam 17-game hitting streak. Nick Anderson is second in the league in home runs, technically third because there's two guys with 17 now. Drew Devine got off to a very fast start. A guy you and I have really not talked about this season who's put up some impressive numbers is Yonny Perez. He's just been a guy that they have depended upon. 47 RBI in 55 games. He's 301 batting average. He's been a guy that has played under the radar all season, but this guy is no joke. This guy is a person that they really depend on to put up big numbers, and he's been a big key to that offense, I think.
Yes, he has. 301 batting average. Like you said, 8 homers, 47 RBIs. You know, he's a guy that's not going to be on many of the leaderboards, but he's been pretty steady for the ball club. And I have to talk a little bit about Nate Sampson, too, whose average just seems to be creeping up higher every week.
Absolutely. The veteran figures out a way. Just fantastic to watch. Well, Kevin, the biggest drop this week, the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks dropped to 6th in the rankings, also dropped to 3rd in the standings here out on the west because of those hot, red-hot Lincoln Salt Dogs. 31-29, 5.5 games behind the Kansas City Monarchs. And a team right now that, you know, I'm really not sure what they're really, I know, again, no disrespect to Anthony Renz and Chris Cole. Both of them are fantastic managers and doing a great job for that team right there in their roles with the club. But they trade away Tanner Riley, which guy was closing games for them a little while ago. And so I think there's some question marks for this team about what they're going to wind up doing with this bullpen right now, it seems.
Well, I don't think it's an indictment on Tanner Riley as much as it is that Fargo's looking for arms to fill up the starting rotation with, and they probably felt that they had an extra arm or two to work with in the pen, and that's why they made the move with Riley. You know, you got to give up something to get something, and that's what I believe the genesis of the trade was here, was that they needed to give up somebody pretty decent with Riley in order to get a guy that could come in and jump right into the starting rotation.
Yeah, that looks like the big thing for them. They were hoping that Garrett Alexander, also coming from Cleveland, would be an answer for them. He has not been. 6.03 ERA, 0-4 so far on the season. It's, you know, when we had St. Paul Saints, sometimes we talked about it. It was Mark Hamburger and four prayers after that. And right now, I feel like you're looking at Tyler Grauer and Kevin McGovern, and then you just don't know what you're going to get beyond that. Carell Prime has looked very good at times, has looked satisfactory at other times, and I think after that, you know, you just don't know what you get. But got to feel better about the performance of Jake Dykhoff and his first outing after the All-Star break. Maybe he gets things going for him, Kevin.
Yeah, that was definitely encouraging to see the outing that Dykhoff had. Sounds like the talk is, I was tuned into a broadcast earlier. Get your days together, Kevin. I was tuned into a broadcast, and it sounds like the word up there is that Calvin Pilot, who was acquired from the Pioneer League, is likely to become a starter. He's only had one outing, one inning pitch. But it sounds like they want Pilot in the rotation, and looks like Garrett Alexander's going to start coming out in the bullpen. So that's looking to be the plan right now with the Redhawks going forward.
You know, I have to say, the standings, I think, have seen the biggest shakeup, maybe in the history of the rankings, Kevin, because Cleveland drops to number 7 this week after a satisfactory performance this past weekend. A club right now going through the stats at this particular point. So, still in second place, 6 behind Milwaukee at 32-31, 5-5 in their last 10, Kevin. And they're continue to get the solid hitting out there. Where do you see this pitching staff going? They're making moves. They're bringing in a Tanner Riley. Are they seeing that's that eighth inning guy that really gets them to Nick Gardewine?
Well, I'm going to, first of all, as far as the rankings go, you know, I do get point totals out. I did the rankings after the games on Saturday. Sioux City's at 37, and then from there it goes 36, 35, 35, 35, 35, 34. So if I did them after the games yesterday, we could be seeing a completely different order here. We could see Cleburne maybe even as high as number three. So let's not get too hung up on where they are in the rankings as opposed to how bunched up teams three through nine are right now. So there's my weekly defense of the power rankings. Getting back to Cleburne, I think we've seen the bullpen get bolstered quite well between Tanner Riley and then Michael Krause are coming back.
I think we should say, first of all, you didn't need to defend those rankings. I'm just saying, I think that we saw such a tumultuous weekend, that kind of thing out there. That is just interesting to see how, as you talked about, and I think a statement that we made before the season even began is that there were 11 teams that we seriously thought had a chance of winning the championship this season. And so it wouldn't surprise me if we see significant changes as things are going along here. But let's talk about a couple guys here, Kevin. Blaze Brothers played very well for this club. I don't think you're expecting him to come up with Jose Sermo numbers, what you say. Okay, but Logan Watkins has done a nice job of filling in some gaps for this team when they've had some guys that are missing. When you have guys like Hill Alexander and Mark Carabiota still carrying the weight in that offense, I don't feel like this team is in any kind of trouble offensively. They just got to continue to get a little bit better pitching if they're going to at least be competitive with a Milwaukee team.
I think you nailed it right there. And granted, they're six games well out, but they are still sitting in second place as we go into this week's action. You know, you bring up Blaze Brothers. I think he's been an excellent table setter for this team, and it's a team that needed one after Delino DeShields left the team. So Brothers has done very well filling that hole.
Chicago Dogs, eighth in the rankings this week, 6.5 behind Milwaukee in third place in the division at 31-31. They are also 5-5 in their last 10, as we're seeing a lot of teams kind of bunched up in that 5-5, 6-4 kind of spot, with the exception of Lake Country. Chicago, I got a huge weekend in terms of a couple of nice home run performances. Josh Altman got his 16th homer. Luke Mangieri, another guy I don't think we talk enough about in this show, Kevin, has really been phenomenal for them. I feel like it is those guys kind of a little bit down the lineup, the Ben Lavorsies, the Nick Heaths, guys like that, that really need to step up their game. If Chicago just wants to get themselves on a bit of a roll, we haven't seen that a role for this team since the start of the year, Kevin, and I feel like it's the bottom of the order that really needs to help get this team going.
Well, Lavorsy isn't the guy I really see as somebody that you're going to have to count on. Lavorsy is more of a role player, someone that's going to give Ryan Lidge a day off behind the home plate or maybe go somewhere in the field, so I wouldn't harp upon him too much. But you know, you look at their stats in the four games coming out of the break, and Mangieri seems to be the only one that's really had a standout week. So there's good players there, but someone's going to need to have to step up and be a guy that can put up Casey Hobson, Keon Barnum-like numbers.
If there's one thing you're a Chicago Dogs fan this week, Kevin, they got to be super happy about, that is the performance of Tyler Palm a couple nights ago. Six shutout innings against Gary, a guy who was really struggling recently. I hope that, if you're a Dogs fan, you got to feel like hopefully he turned the corner. Anything out of that you kind of think, well, maybe that's just an aberration, or hey, this is the guy that we saw earlier on in the year is what we're seeing now.
No doubt. I mean, the entire pitching staff just seems to be heckle and jive this year, and it's got to be frustrating for the Dogs fans just wondering what Dogs team they're going to get night in and night out.
That's a good way to put that, Kevin. Number 9 in the rankings this week, the Sioux Falls Canaries, They are 28-35 in fifth place in the West Division, 10 games behind Kansas City, but most importantly, 4 games behind Sioux City for that final playoff spot. And a team that Jabari Henry, first of all, we should say, Kevin, named by us today as the player of the week. Jabari with a 7-for-11 performance, walked 3 additional times, just had a phenomenal season, phenomenal week for the club. Jabari, a guy you and I like a lot, and glad to see that he's continuing to put up big numbers for those Sioux Falls Canaries.
You know, he was dangling around 200 for a batting average in middle of June, and now you look going into this week, he's up to 264, and now he's only one behind Darnell Sweeney for the team lead in home runs. So it looks like that Jabari Henry has definitely refound his swing, and that's got to be great news for the Canaries.
You know, Kevin, what I find interesting about this club is you look at the record and you think to yourself, well, they're not really having a particularly good season. But this is a team that is in games. I mean, I watched the end of that game, actually from about the third inning on yesterday against Lake Country, and they're doing nothing all game long. And then all of a sudden, Lake Country brings in closer Torres to close out the game for them, and they rallied against him. They had the bases loaded twice in that inning, got a run out of it. Almost came away with a victory out of that. I thought, man, this team just seems like they are right on the cusp of doing something great, but just can't get over the hump. I wonder how you're seeing the team right now.
It's a very explosive offense, and I mean, that's the way Mike Meyer had built his team coming into the season. But once again, it's just a matter of, well, your starting pitching keeps the ball club in the game. I think Meyer does a good job of managing the arms that he does have in the bullpen to get the most out of guys that, let's just face it, are a little less heralded. So, I find it fun to watch because I like seeing these young guys, all Division II schools, getting a chance, or less heralded guys getting a chance. And you just hope that, you know, things are clicking for these young arms down there and that maybe Sioux Falls can still make life miserable for the number 3 or number 4 team in the North Division, West Division.
You know, this weekend, when we were down last week and we were down at the All-Star game, you were pointing out to me that Sioux Falls way down in the standings in home runs. Kind of that's the staple. I mean, you're Sioux Falls. You're playing in the birdcage. You would seem that's the way your offense is supposed to be. Mike Meyer had gone with this very speedy team this season, second in the league in stolen bases. They're running a lot, Kevin. It hasn't materialized into a great record on the road yet. But I feel like that's just a smarter move by him to realize you're not going to put up huge numbers, home run numbers on the road, but you can always steal bases and score runs. And is that a strategy you think that helps this club grab that final playoff spot?
Well, us that have broadcasted some games for the Canaries like to refer to them as AARP, stolen bases, mind you. we got to get the sponsor in there. But you're right, it's a very athletic ball club, and within that you are going to have a lot of guys that can run and steal bases. You know, you look at a guy like Wellington Doltel. Doltel is a guy that's hitting 6th or 7th in your order, but then he's got 25 stolen bases. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, Mike Meyer has given everybody the green light. If you feel like you can steal a base, go for it. And I just think that just does so much for an offense, because now you've got fielders moving to cover bases on stolen bases. It opens up hit and run opportunities. And we got a team that hits well when you also got those other sort of opportunities to produce offense. It helps you in the long run.
Yeah, if they could work on that on base percentage a little bit more, I think they would really be getting something going. Looking for something to go in, Kevin, let's talk about the Gary South Shore Railcats. 10th in the standings right now. They're in last place in the East Division at 26-36, 6-4 in their last 10. Gary got some pretty solid pitching performances. Didn't really come away with much against Chicago this past weekend, Kevin, but did get one great outing out of John Sheets. it looks like he's turning himself into the ace of the staff. And if they could just get Harrison Francis, Chris Irwin, and maybe and Edward Quayle to all kind of jive at the same time, that this staff could looks like they could make quite a run for the team.
It's got potential, that's definite. But it's just, we're just not seeing the consistency out of it. But, you know, it's got to be a little frustrating. Staff had a half ERA at 3.18 in the Chicago series and only came out of it with one win.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part for this club, Kevin, is that you're looking for something to hang your hat on where you can go, okay, look at those numbers. And 3.18, that's a heck of an ERA against a fairly potent Chicago lineup. But they don't come away with anything out of it. You needed a shutout, really, to win a game out of that thing for you. And so I wonder if there really is that thing you can go, well, this is proof to us that Gary's about to get things going. That maybe there's nothing out there like that right now.
I think they just need to have a statement series where they go in somewhere, pound out a bunch of runs, get good pitching, and come out of the sweep and get your confidence up.
Let's move to the number 11 team in the ranking, Kevin, the Kane County Cougars. Fifth place in the East Division, 29-33, 8.5 out, just two games behind Lake Country. So that's the most important thing. Lake Country in Chicago, I guess I should say. So that's the most important thing out there. Kane County, right before the break, Kevin, had some huge offensive numbers, huge home run numbers, 9 home runs over the final two games heading into the All-Star break. Didn't come out of that way. So this Kane County team, though, looking for to get that pitching staff, I still think, leading this club and hoping that guys like Jimmy Kerrigan, Cornelius Randolph, and guys like this really can get their season going in the second half.
It was a huge series for this ball club to go up to Fargo and get 3 out of 4 games. The team right now is in the midst of an 11-game road trip. So to start this road trip going 3-1, I think that is great for this ball club. And, you know, the offense is showing signs of life. They were relatively low-scoring games in Fargo. I mean, Kane County did not hit a home run, scored 12 runs in 4 games, but you found a way to win 3 out of 4 just because that pitching has just been so good. You have to be encouraged by C.J. Eltred, who's racked up 2 really good starts in a row now. And when you throw that in with what Tyler Beardsley can do, what Jack Fox can do, we've seen potential out of Weston Muir and Jose Fuentes. I think I said it, you know, when we did the show during the All-Star break, don't sleep on this Kane County team. And frankly, I'll defend my power rankings again. I think if you did them again after Sunday's games, you might have seen Kane County up by 7th or 8th place instead of 11th.
And again, I have no qualms with that because this is a team that this league is just so, there's such an incredible amount of parity this year, really should be said. And, you know, looking at the 4 games this weekend, Kevin, so they win on Thursday with a 4-0 victory. Then they drop a contest 6-3, come away with a 4-2 victory and a 3-2 victory, a 3-1 victory, excuse me. And I think this says to us, if the offense can get 4 runs on most nights, this team's going to win games. That this pitching staff is that good. And so I think if you're Kane County, this is your formula. We talked about it with Sioux City, but I think Kane County, you can carry this. If you can get 4 runs, you're going to win games with this game.
I'll still say they could probably use another bat in this lineup, and if they got another one, I think this offense is very capable of putting up big runs every night, and you get that going in unison with the pitching. I think this Kane County team can be very dangerous.
Now, I know this is going to sound a little bit off the mark, Kevin, but I'm curious about your thoughts on this, because last year we saw this almost exact same scenario with this club, okay? So I know that the numbers are not enormously huge. Jimmy Kerrigan, I think, had better numbers. But I think, really, seriously, it's not much of a stretch to say that Jonah Davis is an MVP candidate. This guy has carried this club offensively for the most part.
No doubt about it. I mean, it's someone that did not even get to be in the All-Star game, but he has just been a monster for this club. He's emerged in the last month or so as a real dangerous hitter.
Last is the Winnipeg Goldeyes, Kevin. Kind of the season that shouldn't have at the point. 25-37, 12.5 games out. Still a lot of baseball left, so this team is not out of the picture by any stretch of the imagination with 38 games left on their schedule. But it's kind of disappointing, Kevin, because Max Murphy has really caught fire over the last couple months, up to tying for the league lead now with 17 home runs, .291 batting average. He could very easily lead the league in home runs again, but I don't think he's going to get much of an MVP consideration just because his team is struggling.
I don't think so. It's not a good cast of guys protecting him in that lineup, and it's unfortunate because, like you said, he has emerged as having just another solid Max Murphy-like season. So I'll look for positives, though. I mean, this ball club had a big lead on Saturday, I believe, against Milwaukee. End up being tied, but then Winnipeg found enough to get a win in extra innings. And then on Sunday afternoon, Joey Matulovich threw just great in a 5-0 win over the Milkmen. So that's two good wins in a row for this Winnipeg ball club. So they go home, they get Sioux City for 3 games. So now you're facing a team ahead of you in the standings where the attitude's got to be, if you can get a sweep at home against one of your divisional bunkmates, that's a chance for you to jump up in the standings really quick.
And, you know, getting a sweep in Winnipeg is, you know, this is what this team is known for. You know, that's what the Winnipeg Goldeyes do. Teams come to town and they sweep them. And I'm wondering, because I thought those were two huge victories for them over Milwaukee. You know, a team, arguably the best team in the American Association, and you almost look like you're going to give away a game. Then you get a great performance to keep yourself so you get to extra innings and then win. And then you get a fantastic performance by a guy who's probably your number 3, number 4 starter in the staff. Do you see that being the kind of momentum carrier, especially if they should at least take 2 from Sioux City this week?
Well, we were just talking about it with Kane County. You know, they had the 2 big wins against Sioux Falls in the first half. So, you know, it could be something as simple as 2 wins on the road like that that could catapult a team to get things going.
Well, Kevin, interesting series to start the week here. Kane County's traveled to Kansas City to get things going. Everybody off here tonight, I guess I should say, before I dive into that. But a series I'm really excited to see. Lincoln at Milwaukee starting on Tuesday night, and that looks like that could be quite a series, maybe even a potential championship series preview.
I think so. That's going to be a test for Lincoln's pitching going up against a pretty good Milwaukee lineup, and we'll see if the momentum that the Salt Dogs built in winning the last 3 games of the Sioux City series can carry over to series versus the Milkmen.
What may be the greatest rivalry in the American Association, Kevin, picks back up on Friday when Kansas City travels to Sioux City. Sioux City could come out of that very desperate. If they have a tough week in a few games there in Winnipeg, games they really need to win. If they're going to ensure that they get themselves some kind of solidification for their playoff spot, they got to beat Kansas City in some of these games out here. And so what do you expect out of that series?
Well, Sioux City has played very well against Kansas City each time they face each other thus far in 2023. I see it being a tough one for Sioux City on Friday night, as they will have played in Winnipeg on Thursday night and then have to drive all the way back to Sioux City for the game on Friday night, where I believe Kansas City will just be making the jaunt up I-29 after a home series against Kane County. But I can see Sioux City possibly getting 2 out of 3 in that weekend set.
I could see it too, because like you said, they have played very well against the Monarchs, and they seem to get even more fired up for that particular series. Great rivalry, and so it should make for some fun times for sure. Kevin, let's quickly go around the other independent leagues out there, partner league. I mean, I got to get used to saying that. Partner leagues out there, and we'll start in the Atlantic League, where the Long Island Ducks and the York Revolution are tied in the North Division at 37 and 26, six games ahead of Southern Maryland. So one of those teams is going to wind up winning the division. Gastonia and High Point tied in the South Division at 41 and 22, 10 games ahead of Lexington. So this is, again, those two teams deciding it. But quite an interesting story out in Gastonia this week, Kevin.
On Saturday night, there was almost not a game between Gastonia and Southern Maryland, as Gastonia nearly did not take the field over a dispute because the ownership has not been paying the players. You know, you go on the Twitter machine and read the rumors and innuendos, it sounds like the owner is not very liked within the community. He's left some unpaid bills, and it sounds like the Atlantic League is going to pick up the tab the rest of the season for the player salaries. So as good as Gastonia is, you just wonder how much of a future they're going to have. And they got a new ballpark in that city, too. You hate to see this where the city spends the money to build a ballpark, and then the team comes in, and they're not the best operators. You hate to see a good new ballpark sit empty. But we'll see what happens.
Am I wrong? Or aren't they, they built that brand new for a whole new franchise. Like, they didn't come out of minor league baseball. They were a brand new deal altogether. Wasn't that right?
I believe so. I don't know if they were near a minor league market or not, or if it was specifically for the Honey Hunters.
Well, if I'm wrong about that, fans, let me know. Send me out there a message on Twitter or Facebook and let me know about that. Jumping to the Frontier League, Kevin, Taylor Wright of the Ottawa Titans named as the player of the week after hitting .526 with 8 RBI and 3 walks. So congratulations to him. And Logan Schmidt as the pitcher of the week as he tosses 8 shutout innings, striking out 8 and walking nobody for the Windy City Thunderbolts in their victory. And our good buddy Tom Vaith reached out to us today, Tom, to tell us that the Washington Wild Things reached back into their past there as Tom signed Wes Darvall. So, you know, Wes has had a great career there in the American Association, the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, and I'm sure he'll have a great season out there in Frontier League.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing when you can need a position filled and you can go back to an old hand that you've trusted in the past.
West Division standings, the Gateway Grizzlies hold a one-game lead over the Schaumburg Boomers, and in the East Division, Quebec holding a 1.5-game lead over the New Jersey Jackals, who are having their own battles, if I remember correctly, about stadiums and stuff going on out there. Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago, so yeah. Okay, so that's our Frontier League action that we got going on out there. Kevin? I don't think we have any other American Association news. I'm going to do one last quick perusal across the league to make sure that there's nothing I'm depriving. We should mention that next week, Deputy Commissioner Josh Buchholz will join Kevin and I to talk a little bit about this whole baseball classic thing is going on. And Kevin and I had a great opportunity to talk at the All-Star break with Kevin McGovern. And so it sounds like this is going to be quite an opportunity for. It's not just going to be Fargo guys. It's going to be guys from across the American Association they can fill the roster with. So it looks like it's going to be a very competitive, fun little deal that's going on, I guess, Kevin.
And I was happy to hear that. I just thought if you just brought guys in from one club that it's going to be a little underrepresented. You know, sometimes you have players, too, that they're playing professional baseball, but in the offseason they may be going back to college or going back to regular jobs where they wouldn't be able to play in this tournament. So I'm glad it's going to be, it'll be called Fargo-Moorhead, but it will be a league-wide effort. So I just think that's the best way to send a competitive team to this.
Well, Kevin, before closing this out, I believe that you and I did not specifically talk about the Hall of Fame last week. We were focused on the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game. So we should mention that Winnipeg Gold Eye great Reggie Abercrombie, who played in a couple of other teams in the American Association, but his chops, we'll say, so to speak, were labeled out there with the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Ed Nodal, Doug Simonek, great man, probably arguably the greatest manager in independent history, if you want to say that. And Mike Vec, a guy that you and I both know, helped to get independent baseball going, all named to the Hall of Fame. And I know you're not surprised by any of those picks.
No, I'm not. Well, Ed Nodal, a little bit. He deserved it after I heard his name get mentioned, but he was the only one of that bunch I did not have on my ballot. But Nodal was a great manager for independent baseball and in the Northern League.
Now, you've been around at this speeches. For a while, Kevin. They did, too. We were not invited, you should mention. I know you've been around and got to see all of these guys in action and stuff like that. So if you wouldn't mind, could you, of one or two of these guys, would you mind giving a little story that really stands out to you about them? So one or two of the guys. All right, all four if you really wanted to.
Well, Ed Nodal was just... It was as they expected with Nodal. His nickname was Singing Ed Nodal, and he actually had, he recorded an album, believe it or not. I'm sure if you dug around in the archives of vinyl, I'm sure you could find it somewhere. But Nodal was a guy that put Sioux City on the map right away with very competitive ball clubs, and Sioux City was a very good organization in the early days of the Northern League, and a lot of that was due to Ed Nodal. Mike Vec was just someone that I admired. I think a lot of what he believed in kind of opened my eyes to the way you can run a minor league baseball team, and you can present it as just more than a baseball product. You present it as an overall fun product. You know, the saying he had is just basic, but just nailed it when it came to baseball, and that's fun is good. So that would be my two big influences and two of my bigger influences. Doug Simonek, I believe I told the story before where I did actually get a chance to crack the shell on Doug back in, I believe it was 2004, and actually got a chance to talk to him. I mean, just a brilliant baseball mind. And I got a chance to talk to him again in 2011. And you could just tell, as much as Simonek cares about winning, he also cares about the well-being of independent baseball, because that was around the time when we were wondering what St. Paul was going to have as far as a new stadium. And I know Simonek was, even though he is going to be at a recruiting disadvantage because of it, he was very excited that St. Paul was going to have a new ballpark, and he knew it was going to be good for the independent baseball product in general. And Reggie, I never really got a chance to know him, never talked to him. I got this story from Steve Hamburger, Mark Hamburger's dad. Reggie and Mark Hamburger were very close. And they always had a gentleman's agreement, because a lot of times when guys pitched to Reggie, Reggie wasn't going to see a fastball. It was going to be breaking pitches. It was going to be stuff off the plate. They might pitch around him. But it was a gentleman's agreement with Hamburger and Abercrombie that one pitch, one at bat, I don't know if it's a pitch per at bat or a pitch per game, Hamburger was going to challenge him with the fastball. Sometimes Reggie got him, sometimes Mark got Reggie. But they had such a good, friendly rivalry with it, and that's what I'll remember about Reggie Abercrombie.
I will remember that he won the 2016 championship almost single-handedly. Just a phenomenal championship series for those Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Just a true class act and very competitive guy. So, fantastic and well-deserving honor for sure. Kevin, what's going on out there at the 10th inning stretch?
Well, I just wanted to give everyone a heads up, and I wish we would have mentioned this earlier in the show, but independent baseball and minor league baseball in general lost a really good man last week with John Dietrich passing away. Dietrich was a guy, he was a baseball lifer. he would go to a ball club, he'd help them either get things straightened out or he'd help them get things started. And then he'd move on to the next project. Well, his projects in our footprint were, he was the first general manager for the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks and was very instrumental to getting the Fargo-Moorhead franchise off to a very strong start. He moved on to the Schaumburg Flyers in 1999. The similar role got the Schaumburg franchise up and going. He dabbled a little bit in with the Duluth Superior Dukes in 2001 or 2002. But after that, he went back south to Texas and was instrumental in the revival of the Fort Worth Cats. So, John Dietrich is a guy who's had his handprints on independent baseball and the Northern League and the American Association in particular. And he was someone that if I really had a big question about something going on with independent baseball, John was one of my leaning boards. He'd be someone I'd message and he'd always have a reply for me, So this was a tough loss. John meant a lot to a lot of people within baseball. And I'm glad that we had the chance to not have a one-part, but a two-part show with John Dietrich. And if you go into my blog on the 10th inning stretch, blogspot.com, I do have the links there to those two particular shows if people want to go back and listen to John Dietrich tell about his life in baseball.
And he was a fantastic guest, too. One of those kind of people, too, Kevin, that when sometimes Kevin and I will have guests on the show who are a little nervous about being on, don't necessarily spend a lot of time talking in front of other people. So Kevin and I are sometimes drawing answers out of them. But John was one of those guys that just started talking, and I was just sitting here going, man, this is really awesome. I mean, I'm learning so much, and I don't have to open my mouth at all. This is fantastic. So great mind.
We just had to hit record and let him go. And he warned
exactly
us.
Right.
He warned us that if we did that, this show could go on for a while. And he was right. But I tell you, I would recommend going back in those archives and listening to that show because it's, like you said, you learn a lot by listening to him.
Absolutely. So huge loss for independent baseball, just baseball in general. This is a huge loss out there. So,
and that's a name I could see, unfortunately, be posthumously, but I could see John Dietrich being floated around as someone for the Hall of Fame in the next year or two.
Well deserving too. And if I remember correctly, the commissioner telling me they were going to try to stick to three people from now on, is because last year they just chose Miles Wolf as the only inducted to the Hall of Fame, but they were going to go with four this year. But I think that they're going to try to stick with three after that. So, man, that's just not an easy call because there's so many good candidates out there that deserve. And so be excited to see how that works out. Well, I think that covers us here for tonight. Kevin and I once again want to thank Kyle Moore for joining us this week.
Well, we got to do our shout-out for the week, Rob.
We're going to do that. So, Kevin, give me your shout-out for this week.
My shout-out for this week is going to go to Amber Salas of KTIV in Sioux City, Iowa. In the last week or so, Amber has done a feature on our good friend Dan Vaughn. She has done a feature on what was upcoming in the second half for the Sioux City Explorers. She was at the ballpark most of the game on Friday night and Saturday night. And she did a feature on the youth clinic that the Explorers put on Saturday afternoon. And I just think that's tremendous dedication by local media to the local baseball project. And bless her heart for the work she's done, because that's the kind of stuff that keeps the ball club's names in the minds of people and hopefully gets them out to the ballpark.
So my shout-out this week, Kevin, is going to go to Deputy Commissioner Josh Buchholz, who Monday night after the... it was Monday night after the Home Run Derby. Josh was, it was the most happy and stress-free I think I've ever come across him. And because I know this is probably not the easiest job in the world. He loves baseball and is enjoying being a part of this. I totally get that, and that's fine. But I'm sure this is not a stress-free job, let's just say. But that was the first time I got to see him just enjoying himself. And so my shout-out is I was happy to see the lighter side of Josh Buchholz. So that was pretty cool. And you even agreed with me. He looked like he was having a lot of fun there.
He was. He definitely was.
So not brown nosing, just happy for our guy there. So that's pretty awesome. Now I will say, I want to thank Kyle Mora for joining Kevin and I again this week. Josh will join us next week. We're going to learn more about this baseball classic that they have going on and find out what's going to go on with that. Their baseball championship series, I guess, things that they were calling it. So we'll learn a little bit more about that, plus his thoughts on what's going on and if there's any exciting news, because I know we're getting a little closer to talking about expansion for 2024. And I don't think he's going to give us any big bombshells or anything, Kevin, but I think we're getting pretty close to starting to see if we're going to be 14, maybe even 16 teams next season and what that dynamic might look like. So are we ready for 2 or 4 or something even more maybe teams next year, Kevin?
If so, we may have to hire someone else to help us cover this thing.
Well, every time we do that, the person winds up getting a job as a broadcaster.
That's true.
So we have to be prepared for that. Well, folks, we hope to see you next time on This Week in the Association.